live from the Third Coast. It is our time to focus on where genealogy and spirit connect. A time to focus on our connection with ourselves and our past. Here's your host, Susan E. King.
Well, welcome, 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 everybody. We're back, and I think we should have a great show. All the equipment is new, from every wire to every plug to every microphone. So technically, I think we should be doing wonderful. And today is the first anniversary of this whole show. We've been on the air now for a year, and we have had some very interesting times. We've had topics where we focused on lineage clearing. We've talked about past life regressions. We've even looked at how astrology and numerology and mediumship can move into the whole genealogy process. We've talked about DNA. We've talked about Native American genealogy. We've talked about African American genealogy. And we've talked about Jewish genealogy. We've actually had guests from some of the major genealogy websites like Genie.com and RootsTelevision.com, Ancestry.com, GenLighten.com. And we've also talked about subjects and books on how to co-create using our ancestry, how to find our criminal past, books on genealogy for kids, and all kinds of subjects. So it's really been a fun year, and all the podcasts are available both on bbsradio.com as well as at www.susaneking.com. And I couldn't think of a better way to, I guess, end the first year and begin the new year is with the first guest that we had on our show last April. And it's really befitting, too, because Megan Smolniak and Squared, anyway, she has her, she uses the same name twice in her name, but that's okay, I'm only going to say it once, has come out really with a new book that I think is really exciting because it piggybacks on the new NBC television series, Who Do You Think You Are? And I don't know how many of you have been watching this series, but not only has it been an incredible series with stars that we all know who have really taken some incredible journeys back to their past where they have had absolutely no inkling of where they've come from. And it's been an emotional journey for most of them. And it has actually been very, very helpful in helping people understand the process of what genealogy is all about. So, you know, we've got really two things going on here. We've got not only the learning and the stories behind the stories, and I know Megan's going to be able to talk to us a little bit about that, but we also have the whole process of what it takes to do genealogy. And my guest is Megan Smolniak. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Susan. Kind of coming full circle here, huh?
We really are. And a little bit of background. You know, I didn't say much about it, but you're probably one of the most renowned international genealogists there is out there. And for those of you in the audience who have seen some of the major articles all over the major publications about Michelle Obama's roots and President Obama's ties to Ireland and who would be King of America if George Washington wasn't our president. These are, and many other stories that I think have been pretty mind-boggling, really has been all come from Megan's work and her sleuthing, shall we say. So, in any event, we have to be a sleuth, don't you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think I'm a real-life history detective, really.
You know, I always said, Megan, that doing genealogy is really being a detective for dead people. It's really what
I'm sorry. Doing. I'm sorry, the audio just disappeared there.
Uh-oh. I have. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. I'm sorry about that. You said
that's
that
okay.
You always...
That we're just a detective for dead people instead of living people.
Yeah, although, you know, I have to say the kind of things I do, I also find the living. I sort of split my time evenly between the living and the dearly departed.
There you go. So you have a new book out, and one of the reasons I asked you to come on the show is I think that it's really important, since so many people now are tuning in to the NBC series on Friday nights now on Who Do You Think You Are, that your new publication really takes the same title but adds the essential guide to tracing your family history. So I wanted to kind of fill the audience in a little bit about what the book is all about and how it piggybacks with the NBC series.
Well, it's also called Who Do You Think You Are? It is the companion book to the series. This is actually, I think, my third companion book. But it has all the celebrity stories in it, as you would expect. But it's also geared for folks to show them how to do their own roots, because obviously the hope is that as people watch this, including many non-genealogists, that they'll start to get a bit of a hankering to do this themselves. And so it's designed to help folks walk through that whole process and find out who their ancestors were.
Now, looking at the series, and I think we've been through, what, 5 or 6 of the 7 so far?
5 of the episodes have been shown so far. There's 2 more coming in this season.
Right. You know, I've looked at these, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but each one has a story behind the story. You know, when I looked at Sarah Jessica Parker, mm-hmm. you know, hers was a need to belong. That was the story that I got from her. Emmett's was, the story I got from him was, you know, how people can be so inhumane with each other. Let's see, the next one was...
With Emmett, I'd say there's a little bit of a prodigal son returns thing as well. You know, when he went back to Africa, he felt that his ancestors were basically happy to have him back.
Brooke Shields, forgiveness, major was...
It's her grandmother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was beautiful, as, you know, she was able to forgive. She learned enough about the background of her grandmother and... you know, could finally forgive her for being so nasty. I just thought that was beautiful.
Well, you know, interesting too, on that one, I've seen quite a few comments where that one felt familiar to a lot of people. I guess a lot of people had grandmothers out there that maybe weren't the most grandmotherly. And it took courage for Brooke to admit that she wasn't terribly fond of her grandmother. And once she did that, I think a lot of other people said, yeah, that kind of happened to me. But it's true. Once you learn what they endured, then you understand maybe why they were a little cold or standoffish.
Right. And I have to admit, I have not looked at Susan Sarandon yet.
Well, her episode is going to be this Friday.
Oh, it is this Friday. So
yeah.
I didn't miss it.
So stay tuned.
I'm looking forward to it. So, you know, you've been involved, I guess, obviously, with the show and some of the background research, and I don't know how much you can discuss about it, but, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, people do need to understand is that the process of genealogy isn't as simple as portrayed in these one-hour episodes. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. But, you know, it does give you the guidance of how the process and how they went, how you went through the process to get to the end result. Obviously, we each episode doesn't trace a whole, you know, all sides of every family, but it does trace a particular line, I think, that seemed to be the most important for either the individual or to show the broadness and of the scope of genealogy altogether.
Well,
so,
you know,
go ahead.
That's one of the interesting aspects, because what you do see in each episode is the tip of the iceberg. The celebrities' entire family trees are extensively researched. Their whole family tree is researched. What you see in the episode is whatever jumped out as being most compelling or most intriguing. You know, so you see one branch or maybe 2 or 3 ancestors highlighted, but their whole family trees have been crawled over in great detail.
Interesting. So your role in the series, I guess, has been, you know, as part of doing some of the research, I would presume.
Yeah, I worked on 5 of the episodes, and I'm in 2 of them. So.
Well, I saw you in Emmett's.
Well, I think it's okay for me to say now because a lot of people have already spotted in the previews, but I'll be in this week's episode with Susan Sarandon as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the one with Emmett, you were involved with the DNA testing.
Right, yeah, which, of course, I'm a big fan of DNA, so that was really fun to get to play with that. And I have to tell you, he's a sweetie. Everything you hear about Emmett Smith is absolutely true. He's just gracious beyond measure to everybody.
Well, I tell you what, I just got so tickled when he was at the little country store with his cousin that he just met.
Yeah.
And he put his hands together and he says, now this is getting really interesting.
Yeah. Burnt corn, yeah.
But, you know, I think that all of the people, you know, really had felt that when they started, you know, revealing some of the information for the first time.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that's interesting about this series, too, because I've worked on a number of TV shows over the years, and the celebrities, really, what you're seeing are their authentic reactions to everything. They really do have to agree to go on sort of a global scavenger hunt, and they don't know where they're going or what they're going to learn. And for a celebrity in this day and age to make that kind of commitment, that shows you right there that that person has a genuine interest in their heritage. So I think that's one of the reasons, you know, the episodes have been so compelling, because you're seeing people who really do care about their ancestry, and you are seeing, you know, live reactions to what they're discovering.
So, you know, going through some of these episodes, I think the... And I'm sure that your companion book, you know, goes through some of the basics of, you know, how do you start? I mean, most people, you know, that have not done any genealogy and as you know and I know, you know, really don't know where to start. So, you know, if you don't mind, let's, you know, maybe we can kind of get people focused a little bit on, you know, really what it needs to get started. And obviously it needs to, you have to have an interest.
Yeah, that would help. But most, you know, fortunately, most people are interested. I mean, the latest surveys show that 79% of Americans are interested in their roots. And, you know, one of the nice things about the series, too, is I've been on the receiving end of a lot of anecdotal, you know, tales about, oh, you know, now my husband sits and watches the show with me. He never really wanted to, but now he actually enjoys it. And I got an email from my niece, and she's all excited about this, and now my kids want to come to the cemetery with me. So, I mean, it's doing a great job in terms of getting us fresh recruits, you know, into the genealogical fold, which I love. I think that's one of the best aspects of it.
And hopefully some of the younger people, that's always been one of my...
I think when you put in storytelling and you see these famous people tripping around the globe and making these discoveries, and, you know, obviously for TV, of course, you have to streamline it. But I like that it's realistic in the sense that you actually are seeing these celebrities in libraries and at, you know, state archives and at the national archives. And it's not all done online or just by making a few phone calls. They really are traveling around and walking in their ancestors' footsteps. And yes, it is abbreviated, but it's still, you know, authentic.
So if someone really wanted to get started, you know, obviously we all know where the first place is to start, and, you know, obviously it's to take everything that you do know and, you know, commit it to a family tree or a pedigree chart of some sort. And I think one of the other things that people miss is that interview.
Yeah, I always tell people to start at home, you know, to go on a scavenger hunt in their own closets and attics and drawers, and if their parents will let them, you know, and theirs as well. Because a lot of us are sitting on a ton of family history, so I always tell people, go looking for those old photographs and letters and yearbooks and diplomas, certificates, whatever it may be. And then, yeah, get on the phone with any relatives you have who are even 20 minutes older than you. Because they are just, you know, they're living libraries, and they know so much. And they can tell you things sometimes that the paper trail never will. I remember my own family once interviewed an elderly relative. And the only reason I interviewed her is because she was the last remaining relative in my family who was an immigrant from Ukraine. And so I went and interviewed her and outspilled the story about how my great grandfather had murdered my great-grandmother, which there was no paper trail of, and I didn't know. But, you know, if you don't talk to these folks while you can, you're going to miss a lot of your family story. So I always tell folks to start with that, and then is when you jump online and start going crazy collecting documents and all that.
Right, and really, depending upon where you're located and where the family is located would really depend on where to start. But, you know, my feeling is that the census records are probably really the first place to go.
I think that that's what, you know, those are the documents that most people cut their teeth on. I mean, obviously, yeah, with the every 10 years and you get the whole family portrait. And, of course, in the early days, many times you get three generations living together. I mean, yes, those are, once you do start searching, that's the first place I start. That's the first place I start on every case I do.
Me too.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but, you know, and a lot of times, you know, people get frustrated because they don't always find, you know, the family in the census records. And, you know, taking them from the time of their birth to 1930, which is all we have on the census, or if they immigrated from the time they immigrated, is, you know, the most important thing is to do your due diligence and don't skip one of those.
Right.
They're there.
Right. Yeah.
They're there.
Start at 1930 and work your way methodically backwards. And, of course, we know they're almost always there. Every once in a while something happens and they're just missed for some reason. But they're almost always there. You know, and thank goodness you can play with the databases now and get very creative with the variations on the names and all that kind of thing. Many times they're hiding behind butchered versions of their names. But, you know, a little bit of digging and you can find them.
Exactly. So, you know, once you have that picture and you know where they were located, because that's really what the census does, is it puts the family groups together specifically from 1850 on. But it also tells you where they were. And from there, you really do have the opportunity then to go in and really start looking at records.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's more sort of global national records that you can also look at, such as the military records, you know, like the World War One draft, for instance, depending on what era you're in. But yeah, once you know the location, that's when you can start digging in on good old BMDs, birth, marriages, and deaths, and things like newspapers and court cases and all that kind of fun stuff, cemeteries, yeah. That's when you can really start your sleuthing.
And, you know, the birth, marriage, and death certificates, and especially if you're trying to work backwards, is getting more and more difficult to obtain.
Yeah.
Yeah, due to the state's privacy laws. So each state is quite different.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. You know, other countries, you take a place like England and it's all uniform and it's, you know, accessible. Here, it's a patchwork quilt, you know, depending what state you're dealing with and sometimes even what county and what time frame, what you're going to be allowed to get access to. It's, you know, as a genealogist who's been working with the Army for a decade now, I've had cause to work with all the states, and so I know which states are genie-friendly and which ones aren't. And so as soon as you get a case, you're either, you know, clapping in delight or rolling your eyes. What you know is ahead of you finding those records. So, yeah, some states, very quickly, you have to, you know, get creative and work your way around the fact that, for example, they didn't keep birth certificates in most southern states until the 19-teens, things like that.
Correct. So yeah. If you have an immigrant ancestor, you know, those records in the last few years have just become incredibly more accessible.
Right, yeah.
Especially naturalizations have become increasingly more accessible for, you know, the key big, you know, states that, you know, you didn't have access to. I've been amazed at what I've seen in that arena grow in the last couple of years.
Yeah, for those of us who are fairly recent to America, especially when I, and by the way, when I say recent, I mean last century, you know. For me, it was six of my eight great-grandparents who came to America. I mean, the last few years have been tremendous for us between the passenger arrival records and, you know, as you're saying, the naturalization. and even records to access to things like alien registrations, and Social Security applications have become easier to get a hold of, and those are also very helpful for those of us, well, for everybody, but for those of recent immigrant stock, they're particularly helpful for trying to cross the pond and get parents' names and that kind of thing.
And, you know, the other thing is too, that when we have situations where we have an adoption, for example,
mm-hmm.
or we have cases where the names of the parents are not known, and I've got several of those types of cases, as I know you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest revolution, I think, in genealogy in the last 10 years has come from both of our favorite subjects, and that's DNA.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased about that, but yes, I would agree with that, Susan.
I know you're biased. I'm a little biased, too. I remember when it was just a figment of someone's imagination about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
A
decade ago, a little over a decade ago, it seemed a fantasy that we would be able to play with all these genetic toys. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And I know that I'm so excited about the new autosomal testing that's hitting the market right now. I mean, I just think that, you know, for those of us who have adoptees in our families, like a mother or mm-hmm. a brother who's now interested because of the DNA testing, you know, that it should bring to light, as more and more people get tested, some incredible opportunities to connect with our real families.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty amazing because, of course, what autosomal does is it frees us from the tyranny of this single gender line. Now, when you want to play with DNA, you don't have to have a son of a son of a son or a daughter of a daughter of a daughter of a daughter. You have all sorts of options, and I think that's going to be really liberating. So it's going to be really fun to see all the success stories that spill out of this. And yes, one of the first things that popped into my mind is, wow, what a wonderful tool for adoptees.
Absolutely. And too, I mean, I know I have a couple of clients that I've already sent over to get tested because there are no males. You know,
right.
I mean, they're females trying to find a male ancestor. And
yeah.
The old testing methods, even though they were great and there were a lot of success stories, it didn't fit.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. When it first became available, I'm always one of these doubting Thomases. I always have to test the tester. And so I tested 15 people who have roots in the same village, and it's a tiny little village in Slovakia, so it's end of the road. It's one of those places you have to want to go to even today. So we're all related, and I also knew the exact nature of most of the relationships. And darned if the testing didn't get it right. I mean, it can't tell the difference between, say, a third cousin and a second cousin once removed, but it gets it in the right neighborhood, every single one. It didn't trip up, and it showed us all being cousins. It's remarkable technology.
So I think we have just covered all the subjects that are in the book other than the online resources. Interesting how I took us from there to here.
You were flying us through the book. Is that what you were doing? Okay.
Well, you know, I'm proving that the book is the essential guide to tracing your family history.
It's really fun. You know, just today I got an email from a woman that I spoke at the National Archives last week, and a woman was in the audience and asked a question. And based on her situation, I made a few suggestions, including, hey, use Find a Grave, which is one of the websites I suggest, you know, in the book in the chapter about all these cool websites. And she wrote to me today saying she had kind of dismissed it before, but don't you know, her brick wall was answered when she went there. She had just used it before and given up on it, gave it another go, and I got a really nice email thanking me because now, you know, another brick wall's been kicked down. So I love hearing those kind of stories.
Right, and the online resources, I mean, you know, since going back the last 10, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
is fascinating. I mean, there's something new every day, And the other thing, too, is that you look for something a month ago and you don't find it and you go back to the same website and bingo, there it is.
Right.
Makes you want to feel like you've lost your mind, but, You know, it's not so.
That's the great thing is these databases are all exploding. You know, with digitization, it's easier to do. So all these databases are moving forward faster. So if you are stuck someplace, it's worth revisiting. You know, put yourself a tickler file to go back once a month or whatever.
I mean, that's what I end up doing for, you know, my clients, Megan, is I, you know, and they say, well, you've been quiet for a long time. And I said, well, I'm just kind of sitting around waiting to see if something pops up. And just this week, I've got a case in Culpeper, Virginia, and then, you know, just this week, the Chancery records, this month.
I was playing with those too. I love those records, yes.
And lo and behold, my family, that I'm researching happens to be in there. I'm not really excited about going through 256 pages of handwritten notes taken during the...
No, I know, but, you know, still, I mean, the accessibility again. I mean, it's nice when our problem is one of overload, isn't it, you know?
Well, I remember back when that was not the case.
No, I can remember months between documents.
Yes, and now it's days and weeks and you know, minutes. It's really incredible what has happened. And even when you and I talked a year ago, we talked about the growth and the change in genealogy. And I've seen, even in this past year, a lot of the state archives have gone digitized.
It's been an interesting year. It's a little bit like the vital records. On the one hand, yes, there's been a lot of forward movement. On the other hand, it's been very distressing to see how many libraries and archives are scaling back or, you know, streamlining or shutting down or getting rid of staff. I mean, constant battles, Michigan, now Boston Public Library. You know, when governments run out of money, it seems that, unfortunately, you know, libraries and archives are one of the first places they look to shave back. So that's a bit of a struggle. But, yes, the ones that are doing fine have been putting just tremendous amounts of records online. And, of course, they tend to do it for free, which is nice, too.
Yep, and Clayton Library here in Houston, they're cutting back a day, I think. I just read that. So, it has been exciting and trying all at the same time. So some of the key sites that you recommend.
Find a Grave is one of them. That's one of my favorite ones. My husband loves to annoy me by calling it Pick a Grave. When we're surfing, when we're surfing together, he's always like, well, let's go to Pick a Grave. It's one of his favorite. But, you know, now, I mean, last time I checked, there were over 44 million graves transcribed there. So that's one of those ones that is growing in leaps and bounds, and you never know what you're going to find. So that's a fun one. I mean, Ancestry.com, it goes without saying, of course, you know, well over 4 billion records and exploding all the time. That's where I start pretty much all my cases. But it's been really fun watching pilot.familysearch.org as well. I mean, that's like a candy store. You know, every week there's something new. And I like how global it is that, you know, you can go in there and find records from Argentina and Belgium and stuff. It's really fun poking around and seeing what's new there. And there's certain states that now you're happier and happier to get cases involving them because, for example, they'll have whipped up 50 years worth of death certificates for those states, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's another really fun resource. And then I like, you know, lesser known quirky ones. I like deadfred.com. You know, it's one of the photo bases where anybody can upload photos or search the ones that are up there, try to find their relatives. I'm a big fan of Joe Biney out in Colorado who does deathindexes.com. I think he's one of the best unknown genealogists out there. He just does those simple lists, you know, organized geographically, so by state and then by region and then by county and all that. And, you know, it's that's another source I find myself going to over and over again.
And footnote.com.
Yeah, footnote is really fun. That's a fun one for things like naturalization records and some Civil War records. A lot of military on footnote.com, so that's one I find myself. In the book, I try to use examples of folks that we're all familiar with. So I do everybody from oh, I've got Snow White and Hugh Hefner in there, but for naturalizations, I use Chef Boyardee, who is a real person, because it was interesting, his naturalization records, you can actually find some of them on Ancestry, some of them on Footnote, and some of them on Pilot.FamilySearch. So with one fellow that we all kind of know, I was able to demonstrate three different websites.
Interesting. Well, you ready to take a call? We have Kim from Maryland on line one. Kim?
Hi, how are you?
We're good, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I have a little cold, but other than that, I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Well, good, good. You have a question for Megan?
Yes, I do, Megan. I'm actually new to the show. A friend was telling me about it, so I'm just tuning into it. I have a question. My daughter passed October 30th of 03, and I keep seeing, she keeps bringing Envision to me, two women and one man, and I'm not, I've never seen these people before, so I'm, that just has me a little curious.
I might just jump in a little bit. Obviously, there are some relatives of yours, and she's trying to probably tell you that she's with them. So how much of your genealogy have you done?
Very little.
Okay.
My aunt
I would venture... I would venture to say, just from what I know, is that she's with someone, a man and a woman, that's probably part of your family. And that probably, if you have the vision, you can probably do some research on your family and see who these people might just be.
Okay.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. I would echo what Susan said. I wouldn't be surprised if you did a little bit of research on your family. And, you know, you find some distant cousin who winds up emailing you a photo from the family, and you're going to have that sort of chills down your spine kind of feel. You're going to recognize the people in the photo.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, that sounds good to me. I'll have to, you know, I do have a couple aunts that are really big into the genealogy, tracing back, and so it is kind of interesting.
it's fun. Once you take a step, you'll find it becomes rather addicting because it is your own personal, you know, family history mystery. But it sounds like you can piggyback off of the efforts of your great aunts. And there's always a few people like that in every family, and it's a great starting place.
Right, because I know my aunt has told us that we're related to Queen Elizabeth, and I don't know, there's a bunch of famous different people, so like I said, I have checked into research, doing research on it, but not deeply, so maybe that's what I need to do.
Well, if these people are dressed in costume, maybe they may go back.
Right. Huh. Okay, well, now, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. I mean, I am a strong believer in some of these things. Megan and I talked about it, I think, on the show about a year ago. Is you know, that we are connected to our ancestors, you know, whether they are living or they're not. And they appear to us all the time. I mean, Megan and I both have lost our mothers, and My mother won't leave me alone.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, my daughter, she, you know, I mean, I've been seeing spirits since I was five, so my daughter does visit quite frequently, as well as my dad and other loved ones who have passed. So, you know, not too many of us are that fortunate to be able to really communicate with them, you know, so I am very blessed.
You really are. And really, too, and I know Megan, we've talked about this before, too, is, you know, when you're doing genealogy, you really ended up talking to the people that you're researching. you know, at least I do. I mean, it's, you know, the more you learn and, you know, and sometimes if I get really frustrated, I'll just say, oh, come on, where are you?
Yeah, that's what my aunt says. She's really addicted to it. She has done lots and lots and lots of research, and I guess she's been doing it for over 10 years, I'd say. So she's really, really into it.
Good, good.
Yeah, and that's what we really want is, that, you know, those of us who have been in the genealogy field for many, many years, and I know Megan and I go back about 30. I don't know about you, Megan. I think you're younger than I am. You know, it's really just beautiful to see the interest and in this field just grow and grow and grow in popularity. And, you know, and it's no longer a field for little old ladies, even if some of us little old ladies are still doing it.
Now, Susan and Megan, do you all ever do readings on your show, or?
I do occasionally have guests that do readings on the show, and I hope to be doing readings on the show myself one of these days soon.
Oh, okay, good.
Believe it or not, I'm working on it.
Oh, okay. Now, what days are you going to be on the air? Because like I said, a friend just told me about your radio show here, and this is the first time, actually, for me to get on.
Okay.
So.
We're on the air every Tuesday, and it's 11 a.m. Pacific time. And we've had some really interesting guests, and we really do try to bring the whole concept of genealogy and spirit together, because there is something there, and I know it's there, and I've felt it ever since I first started genealogy 30 years ago. I felt an incredible connection to my ancestors in a spiritual way, not just a name and a place and a date on a piece of paper. So that's been one of my motivations, and you too, Megan.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I reached a conclusion a long time ago that our ancestors want to be found as much as we want to find them. I do that same thing where I dig and dig and dig, and if I get stuck, I just say, okay, you got to help me out here. Where do I look next? That kind of thing. And sooner or later, yeah, they find ways to communicate with you and help you find them.
They really do. And I mean, you know, the whole spiritual side of genealogy is something that I think every genealogist does, whether they either A, admit it, or B, recognize what it is they're really doing. But, you know, the find and, you know, putting the pieces together, sometimes happens at a level, sometimes it is not totally within your cognizance at that particular time. And there are times, too, where you're guided to something where you would not normally think to go, and you don't quite know how you got there, but
that
you
happens.
Did. And
that happens a lot. You're in a library, and a book falls on your head, or you're in a cemetery, a huge cemetery, and you trip over a tombstone and come face-to-face with the one you were looking for, that kind of thing, yeah.
And it happens all the time, and you know, I really think that if you allow yourself to be open and allow yourself to follow whatever it is that you're being guided to, that it really is amazing. You know, Megan, did I share with you the story of how I found one of my great-great-grandfather's tombstones?
It was
in Queens, New York. I was with my father, who was not real well. And I was determined I was going to find Solomon McGill's tombstone. And I went into the office, and they had no record of it, but I had his death certificate. I knew he was there.
Yeah.
And I'm roaming and roaming and roaming, and my father is moaning and moaning and moaning. And
I'm sorry about that.
No problem. There we go. And anyway, he's moaning, I'm roaming, and he starts complaining, and I finally said, okay, Dad, I'm going to go look in one other place. And you know how you get when you get flustered and frustrated and you had a mission and you weren't going to finish it? And I just huff up this little hill, and I trip, and I fall right on a stone.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, I'm mad, I'm aggravated, and I lift myself up by my shoulders, and I look down at the name, and it was my great-grandfather. So,
wow.
I told you, my very first book was called In Search of Our Ancestors, and it was 101 stories of sort of serendipity like that. And I could have done a whole chapter easily of cemetery stories. And there's a lot of times when people will just go, it'll be something like what happened to you, Susan. They'll go there, and maybe the sexton's office is closed, and there's just an ocean of tombstones, and how are you going to find it? And just different ways. Sometimes it's tripping. Sometimes it's just you stop the car and it happens to be in the right place. But somehow, you know, you manage to pluck out that one stone out of all of them. So I remember back when I was doing the book tour, and that people would ask me, well, how do I get a little bit of that? You know, I want some of that serendipity myself. And I would always tell them, go hang out in cemeteries, because sometimes our ancestors like to communicate with us there.
And, you know, we didn't talk about that as a real source for genealogy, but we talked about Find a Grave online. But the other thing, too, is to search out, you know, and if you can, is to visit the cemeteries, because, you know, you might find one grave on Find a Grave, but there might be a whole plot, and that plot can tell
There could be a dozen people in that plot. Yeah, there can be a dozen people in that plot with different surnames, and so you're finding the daughter's married names and all that sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
And one other thing, too, in Jewish research, sometimes they're buried in Landsmannschaft and plots. And if you don't know where they came from and you find that they're buried in a particular Landsmannschaft and plot, which is a place of people that came from the same towns in Eastern Europe, you can actually find out where they came from.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in any event, we are taking calls. The number's 888-815-9756, toll-free. If you have any questions for Megan, specifically, this is the time to catch her. She's a busy gal. Other sources that we haven't touched on, I think, land records, I think.
Yeah, land records are great. I can tell you one of my earliest experiences, my first field trip, I went, I won't name which county, but I went to a particular place to look for my family's deeds and all that, and I was told in no uncertain terms that my people wouldn't have owned property. I remember that very well. And, of course, we actually did. And I was able to find, you know, all those records. And they're really useful in other ways, too. I find myself turning a lot to property records, particularly when I'm doing African-American research. It's an unfortunate element, but I find that's when I mostly dig in, you know, deeds and estates and that kind of thing.
And, you know, I think it's important, too, I guess, because maybe the audience may not understand is why that information is so important.
Well, prior to emancipation, anybody who was enslaved was basically treated as property, and so the greatest chance for finding any mention of these people is, unfortunately, is, you know, mixed in with the silverware and the crops and all that. So I just end up doing an awful lot of African American research, so that's what I end up mostly doing when it comes to any sort of property records, is trying to find people's ancestors, sad to say.
Right. And I think one of the really very compelling episodes of the show, Who Do You Think You Are, is with Emmett Smith and, you know, and how, I mean, that is an incredible show on how to really do research on African American ancestry, because, you know, truly you have to know the names of the owners.
Yeah, that's unfortunately one of the first things you have to learn. The good news is that there are more and more places to get that particular piece of information, but then that's when the slogging really begins. And it's, you know, that's some of the most unsettling research I think there is, because I don't care how long you've been doing it, you know that at some point in the process, you're probably going to have the experience of seeing your ancestor with a dollar sign attached to, you know, and I think it's just a hard moment to prepare for, and it takes a lot to absorb and sort of digest when that happens.
And, you know, and then on the whole Jewish ancestry side, you have the whole Holocaust, you know, to deal with, and you know, just the gruesome discoveries of families that were, you know, totally cut off from each other, murdered. Some survived, some did not. It's
Lisa Kudrow's episode, I think, you know, brought that home. That, you know, what I mean, you learned in graphic detail what happened to her great grandmother and the family that had stayed behind. It's just, you know, it's just hard to swallow.
It really is. And, you know, and if you're doing Native American research, you know, the Dawes rolls are now online too.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, there's an explosion of information, but we all have to prepare ourselves for what we're going to find. And I don't think that's much of a deterrent, because genealogists in general tend to be truth seekers, and we know we're going to find some unpleasant realities. But, you know, you just have to kind of prepare yourself for that up front. Depending on what your heritage is, you have an educated guess of what you're going to encounter.
As far as, and I don't have the website in front of me, but I do know that the episodes, if you've missed any of them, are available online at NBC.com.
That's right. Yeah.
Under Who Do You Think You Are? And I think they'll be on through September or something.
Yeah, they put them up. The show runs on Friday nights, and they put them up by Saturday morning. So if you miss the show, you know, you can get it pretty quickly. In America, the show has already been sold into 8 other countries. And so for the time being, in those countries, you can't access the shows online. For instance, it's going to start airing in England actually before it even finishes airing here in America.
So they're going to be airing the U.S. version as well as the British
version?
Yeah,
the U.S. version is going to be in 8 other countries at least. So we're going global.
That's incredible. You know, I was talking to someone in Israel not too long ago, and they said it's starting up there too.
Yeah, there's an Israeli Who Do You Think You Are? There's an Australian one. There's a South African one. I mean, this is... this is one of these phenomena. It really is global. What is a little bit different is that the American series is the first one that's being shown overseas, but I hope that the other countries reciprocate. I would love, for example, for BBC Americas to start showing, they're in their 8th season in England, and I would love to see those episodes on BBC America. So hopefully we'll get a little bit of reciprocity and we can start seeing the shows from Israel and Australia and so forth. We'll see.
Wouldn't that be phenomenal?
I think it would be. You know, ultimately, genealogy is all about connection. And, you know, that's why would people in other countries be interested in these so-called American stories? Well, we're all interconnected. If you go back far enough, we're all cousins. And that's why I'm just as curious about the episodes. I don't care even if that person who's featured is a celebrity in my mind or not. It's more about the stories and how I can relate to it and the commonalities and, you know, what I might be able to learn in terms of my own detective skills and all that. So I'm greedy. I want as many episodes about as many people as I can possibly get.
Well, you ought to try to negotiate and put them on Roots Television.
we have a few from other countries there. You'll find a few episodes up there, but haven't been able to get a whole lot of them.
Yeah. So, you know, while we have a few more minutes, let's talk about some of your other projects. I know we talked about them before, but you do have RootsTelevision.com.
Right,
and,
actually, I was just going to tell you, hopefully next week we'll have a video up there from this year's annual Ellis Island Awards. So that'll be fun. Yeah. And, by the way, for any of your listeners who happen to be in the L.A. area, I'll be at the L.A. Times Book Festival this weekend, so that should be fun. And I think a bunch of us will probably all be at NGS in Salt Lake City here shortly. I will as well. And, you know, I do research for the U.S. Army, and recently, I don't think we spoke about this last time, Susan, I've been doing work for the FBI and NCIS and some police offices and things like that. So I continue to try to find new things that we can do with genealogy. I'm always kind of pushing the boundaries.
And your other project, the unclaimed persons?
Unclaimed persons, yeah, yeah. That's kind of what got me into all the FBI thing and all that. What that is a sizable volunteer community, several hundred people. It's based on Facebook. You can go to unclaimedpersons.org to learn about it. But this was several years ago. I discovered this sort of quiet epidemic that coroners have all these bodies, and they're not John and Jane Doe's. Their identities are known, but there's nobody to claim them. They can't find the next of kin, and genealogists turn out to be pretty darn good at that. In fact, probably right about today, I think we're going to hit our 150th solved case. And so just volunteer genealogists step in, and we post these cases. It's on a private Facebook group so that conversations can be quite open. We don't have to worry about our conversations drifting out onto Google, that kind of thing. You do have to request to join the group, meaning that what you're going to do is agree to certain standards, such as you don't contact the families, you just provide the information to the coroners and they'll make the contacts, that kind of thing. But yeah, we track down the next of kin for them, and we've got quite a successful track record. The group is, I guess, it'll be 2 years old in June.
Amazing. Because it was 1 year old last year. Well, I've got a proposition for you.
What's that?
If you've got a couple of your totally unsolved cases that you're going nowhere with, I'd like to work on them through another means.
Oh. I don't think that would be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'd be a good test case for me to see how well I'm doing in my studies.
anything that works. When I try to solve cases, any approach, I'm very open-minded about any approach that might help, bring the family together, bring resolution, bring closure, whatever it is.
Right. I agree with you. And so I've been studying for several months now, and actually I've been studying for a couple of years, and actually I've been at it for 30 30 years, but just really got back into practicing a little bit some of those sleuthing skills on the other side. So we'll see how we do.
Okay.
Interesting for me. I need some test cases. I seem to be doing pretty well for some of my clients, but it's always good to practice on things that you're not overly involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So, who else have got? Megan, you there?
No, I'm sorry, the audio went out there. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Who is it, Scott? Who handles the cases?
No, there's actually a whole group of people. There's three main administrators, and then there's a number of case administrators, and there's even people to mentor newbies to the group and that kind of thing. So it's quite a sizable effort. There are hundreds of volunteers, and more coroner's offices are finding about unclaimed persons. And so it's become quite an enterprise, and so no one person can handle a lot of it. It requires this whole infrastructure.
Right. Well, I mean, you simply amaze me every time I turn around. You're into something new.
I have so much fun. I get to play in so many fun playgrounds. I posted yesterday on Twitter, I consider myself to be sort of the Forrest Gump of genealogy, because I just have so many moments where I think, wait, am I on candid camera? Is this really happening? I just have a great deal of fun doing genealogy every day.
It is definitely a bug, and once you catch it, you really, it never goes away. And I happen to agree with you. I think since we talked, I've been doing my own set of caseloads that I really didn't expect that I would be doing back in April last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah, it's
every minute of it. And I'm trying to do different things just like you, and not really focusing on, obviously I have one area that I focus on that I should know a lot about, and that's you know, the Jewish ancestry. But I've actually been doing everything, you know, all kinds. Murder mysteries, I think I love the best.
Yeah, I mean, I really thrive on the variety of cases I get. You know, the things I'm doing for the FBI, I'm working on civil rights cold cases, and that's been a real education for me. You know, I help NCIS with the sordid murders that occurred decades ago, and it's just really interesting to see how many applications genealogy has. Of course, I love traditional, conventional genealogy, researching your roots, going back as far as you can, but it's fun to play in the fringes and see what else we can do with it as well.
Right. Well, you and I seem to, I think, like the you know, I get my biggest urges out of are the ones that require a bit more I don't know what you call it.
I'm sorry, there's some audio issues here again.
Uh-oh. It's got to be my internet connection. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine now, yes, yeah. I'm sorry, what were you just saying, though?
I just said I just love the things that really are putting pieces of puzzles together.
Yeah, and I like it when they're challenging. I like it when the ancestors make me work for it, you know, because it's more rewarding ultimately when you do solve the mystery.
Well, I tell you what, since we seem to be having some audio issues, I don't know what it is. I thought we had fixed everything, but, you know, we're pretty close to the hour. So in closing, thanks for joining the show again. I really enjoy talking to you. There's so many new things and so much going on, and obviously, you know, we take some of the same paths, but we've been on different tracks, and it's been, you know, fun to watch you over the last year, I think, and a lot of the things that you're doing. And I'm really excited about these episodes and these shows that, you know, are really getting some prime time, and very happy to hear, too, that they've already been picked up for another season.
Yeah, isn't that great news? I'm very happy. I did a happy dance when I learned about that.
I bet you did.
Yeah, so everybody listening, just watch and tell your friends and tell your cousins. Let's make sure the ratings stay nice and high so we have many, many seasons of Who Do You Think You Are?
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It sure
and
would.
I mean, for everybody out there, you know, get involved. It is really so important to, you know, learn a little bit about your ancestors and where you came from, because it really is self-discovery. And even working with other clients, Megan, and I think you probably can say this, is I learn more and more about myself, even if they're not my ancestors.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. It's really interesting, even just, you know, it doesn't matter whose ancestors you're working on. There's always certain ones that call to you more loudly. There's certain ones you feel compelled to learn about. And, yeah, it broadens your understanding and appreciation.
And, you know, just as you go out and meet, you know, new people in the living world and you learn from those people, you also learn from the mistakes and the things that people have done extremely well in their lives, and you learn, you know, about how things work and how things don't work and missteps and how to avoid missteps. And it really doesn't matter whether they're your ancestors or not. You know, it is really an educational tool, and I can't stress enough, and I know Megan's going to chime right in, get your kids involved. Get them involved young. Hello.
You have been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect with Susan E. King. Each week, we will focus on the spiritual journey of connecting ourselves with our ancestors. Join us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. For upcoming show information, you can visit Susan's website at www.susaneking.com.